Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Kaboom.
To take you deeper in your parenting. That is the most awesome one yet.
Tried to channel my inner Marvin the Martian.
Oh, the date today is September the 26th to 27th.
27th.
I was 3 minutes off from that. 2013. Our topic for today is the power of chamomile.
Chamomile.
We did go look this up today before we started this show. It is pronounced chamomile and chamomile. So however you want to say it, you got it. So I like it because it has the word camo in it, Jeff. I'm dead serious.
Well, you know, I guess whatever floats your boat. But if you're focusing on the camo side of it, you set your tee down, you turn around, you can't find it, it's your own fault.
It's camoed in. So our topic today is going to be the power of chamomile. Almost said chamomile. Today we're going to talk a little bit. The last couple of weeks, we've actually gone over a show set that has involved kind of some, I don't know, Jeff, how do we word that? You said reactive versus proactive. Is that how do we?
Right,
that's
right.
Actually a good way to put it.
We were looking over and talking over some alternatives to alternative correction styles, and the more we looked at it, we thought we were going to disagree on a lot, but we ended up agreeing on more than we disagreed on.
But
the idea
sucked.
Was what we found out that we liked about the, I think it was 21 things we looked at last time. What we liked about it was that she had the right heart. But she kind of missed it with how she implemented things, kind of with the wrong motive. And so we spent a lot of time talking about some good ideas that kind of went wrong. And so
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, today we thought we'd go from the other side and talk about ways to parent the right way that are really in line with the philosophy that we talk about at the Family Podcast Network, Real Family Guys Podcast. And Trey actually found this one. I usually do the scouring and find some sites and throw them up there, and we talk about them. And this time Trey sent this one to me, and I looked at it, and I said, man, this is good stuff. This is, instead of talking about what not to do as a parent, this is what to do.
Yeah, that's good. Before we get into that, guys, let's jump into our housekeeping for today. If you want to get notified of all the new episodes that Jeff and I kick out every Friday, hey, I got a way for you. You can jump over to thefamilypodcast.com. That is the sister station of the Real Family Guys podcast. We piggyback with these two shows onto that one particular website. Jump over on the right-hand side, enter your name and your email address into that little box over there and sit submit. When you do that, you'll get emails of all the new episodes that we hammer out to let you know not only what it is we talked about, but exactly what we talked about in the show. It's short, simple. It's nothing big. I don't sit there and load you down with a whole bunch of stuff to buy or anything like that. It's just to help keep you guys in the... No, if you guys have any questions or comments, thoughts, concerns, anything that you'd like to hear Jeff and I talk about or a subject that you're interested in, we want to hear from you. Lots of ways that you can do that. You can always email us at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com, jeff@texasfamilyinstitute.org, or you can also go to the jump into the right-hand side of the screen at The Family Podcast and click Ask Trey a Question. That also means Ask Trey and Jeff a Question. Whenever you call, make sure to let us know which show you're asking about, The Real Family Guys Podcast. Ask us your question first, then give us the details. That'll make sure that we don't get your question too far or too late into it, because there is a time limit on that. Ask your question quick and fast. Get those details in there as quickly as you can. Don't be afraid to write it down if you ever do that. Whenever I would call into shows that I'm interested in, I write show notes down as I go into my question, because it helps me be succinct and fast. So don't forget to do that. Guys, you can also call us at 661-PARENT-0 if you're out and about driving around in your car and you're like, oh my goodness, I need to ask Trey and Jeff a question, but I know that I'm going to brain fart this and forget by the time I get to my destination. Hey, no problem. 661-PARENT-0. Dial that number in. You won't hear, hey, this is Jeff and Trey on the line. Go ahead. You will, however, get sent to an automated voicemail that will allow you to leave your question. We'll see about slinging it up on the show for you. Guys, you can also go to the Facebook page for The Family Podcast. It is listed in the upper left-hand corner of this page if you're at thefamilypodcast.com. Click on that little Facebook icon at the very top left. It'll take you over to our Facebook page. You can ask a question on a thread, or if it's more private, you can always toss it into a private message or instant message feed on Facebook. Bottom line is, guys, Jeff and I want to talk with you. We want to connect with you. We want your questions. I do want to send out a quick shout out to Stacy. You did ask us a question a while back of Jeff and I. We did get that, and we've had this show in the book, so we will be answering your question, I assume, next week to get back to you with the question that you had about Jeff's particular post that he had posted over on his website. It's a really good website post on punishment and discipline and what that looks like and what do we need to be doing. We are going to talk some about that, so be ready for that answer coming up for you soon. Anything else on the housekeeping, Jeff?
No, I think you covered it, Trey, and you did it very well.
Hey, you know, I have to do this a lot, so we got this down slick as butter. All right, so the topic for today is the power of chamomile. Like Jeff had said earlier, we found a really good article that is going to be kind of the, I don't want to say the antithesis of last week. And the reason I can't choose the word, you know, the opposite of what we went through last week, because that lady, Jeff, really, she wasn't on the wrong route to me. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of these parenting, you know, memes and all that crap that's out there, they're just flat out going down a road. I don't even say the wrong road. They're just going down a road of perdition. You know, it's just going to backfire on them and create the opposite results that we want. And the lady that we talked about over the last 2 weeks isn't going down the wrong road. I just think, like you said, I think the misguided was the word you used, and I think that's a great way to put it.
Well, like I said, when I originally read it, some of the ideas kind of jumped off of the website. It's kind of novel and an interesting, maybe even kind of humorous take on some of them. You know, I think the last one was the one that made me laugh the most. The dad who was, trying to get his son to do a really good job picking up dog poop in the backyard, and his way of making sure that he did it well was, "Hey, son, when you're done, you're going to walk through the backyard in your bare feet." You know, well, okay, I can. I mean, it made me laugh anyhow. So
I almost can endorse that. I don't know the idea of it saying because I'm the parent, you're going to go do this. I have a little bit of a problem with it, but I mean, there's some levels of logic to that. I mean, if you're not going to do a good enough job that you don't want to walk around barefoot in the back when it is your job, I mean, I get that. But anyway.
Well, the site we're looking at today is the naturalchild.org. Author Jan Hunt had previously published this, and it's been republished here on this was taken from a book called The Natural Child Parenting from the Heart. She offers 22 alternatives to punishment. I really like the way she says this because I think that she uses punishment in the way that I try to define it. You mentioned that we had a listener who wrote in, who had read the article I posted on my website about.
What's your website again, by the way? I always forget.
It's www.youneedacounselor.com. And I've got a little blog there that you can go to. And one of these days, when I'm when I'm on top of my game, I'll be expanding that and adding to it. But it's got some good articles on there already. And this is one that I'd written a while ago, and wanted to share. And basically, the idea is that that words carry connotations with them, and a lot of times we use those three words, discipline, correction, and punishment, interchangeably mm-hmm. and synonymously. But I think they carry different levels of meaning with them. And so anyhow, listener Stacy had written in and said that she had felt like she was maybe doing a little bit more punishment than correction, and she wanted us to talk more about that. So we're going to look into that. But here on this website that we're looking at tonight, naturalchild.org, 22 alternatives to punishment. I think the author really understands that same kind of idea that punishment is something that we don't want to do with our kids.
Yeah.
And so she offers some great alternatives that what we're doing is we're not punishing our kids. What we're actually doing is we're looking past behaviors and we're looking for alternatives and ways I like the way she said it, to allow our child to teach us what love is.
Yes, right? That's so good.
So, just like we started out a couple weeks ago with our list of 21, Trey and I are often chatty and talky enough that we probably need to jump right into this so we can go ahead and get
what
through
do you
it.
Mean, Jeff? I don't
Otherwise,
understand.
This might just turn into another two-parter here, Trey.
You know, I saw that there were 22 on this and I thought, uh-oh.
All right, so starting off here, I want to point out that when we're doing parenting right, Trey, it ought to be a joy. And
yes.
And what I work with so often is I get parents coming to me telling me they're frustrated with their kids and that they're worn out because they're spending so much time correcting their kids that they don't have time to love them. And so these 22 alternatives are things that give positive loving messages, even though the behavior of the kiddos may not be where it needs to be. It's a way to respond to them that doesn't emotionally drain you as a parent. All right. So let's start off. Number one, Ms. Hunt suggests that you can prevent unwanted behavior by meeting your child's needs when they're first expressed. With his or her current needs met, your child is free to move on to the next stage of learning. All right. So what I really like about this is that it speaks to basic philosophy that we espouse here at the Family Podcast Network of being a proactive parent. When you can notice that your child is having some unwanted behaviors, you're responding to it, but being proactive means that you're getting ahead of the next occurrence, right? Instead of just waiting for the next occurrence to happen and then reacting to it, that now we're looking for, okay, I need to find ways to meet their needs so that I don't get to the stage where I'm having to correct their unwanted behaviors again, right?
You know,
go ahead.
You know, I think a lot of times people hear this one. They hear prevent unwanted behavior by meeting child's needs when they are first expressed. I think a lot of parents get this confused with the mentality of letting your kid do whatever they want in however way that they want it. So if your little bitty kids have a toy, right, they want a toy that the other little kid has, right? If they want to walk up to them and slug them in the chest because they want their toy, you don't just let them do that because, oh, look, now we're getting their need met. We're not talking about that. Now, you know, I especially have very big lines that I draw when it comes to the safety of other people, right? So, you know, I let kids do a lot of things up until that point that they start affecting other people. And so, you know, we're not talking about letting them run over. And so I don't want to make sure we get this idea that this is confused with, like, letting kids do whatever they want. But this all comes from the mentality that all behaviors or all things that kids do are behaviors that are trying to communicate something. And if we can reset our filters to see the little whiny temper tantrum, the tapping in the middle of the store, or the little crazy rolling of eyes of teenagers or whatever else, if we can reset ourselves and realize they're trying to meet some need, there's something that they're needing, there's something that they're wanting as humans, but they just don't know how to get to it. Or another way to put it is, the way they're trying to get to it sucks. And we need to, our jobs as parents is to reassess how they're teaching, you know, how they're learning what's okay to try to express themselves and do it in a better way. We just had best-selling author Andy Andrews come on earlier this week to talk about his new book, The Noticer, but it's particularly much more engaged on how do we raise a generation of kids this way. But he actually shared an example to where he was sitting down and he was telling his son something, and his son was doing that, I know, I know, I know. And he said, Trey, I tell you, the first thing I wanted to do is just donk him over the head. You know, I was frustrated with him, and I didn't want to have anything to do with this. I just wanted to drop the hammer on this kid. Uh-huh. Said, but what I realized was that he was trying to express that he knew what his dad was already talking about already, but he was doing it in a poor way. So he said, Trey, it's one of the times, I get it right sometimes, he said that I sat down and I told him, I said, listen, son, I don't think you really want to say, I know, I know, I know. Because when you say that, here's what I hear. And then explain to him the emotional reaction that he had to him and how he
parents
was perceiving
have feelings
him. Too. Yeah, exactly. And he said, you try to imagine if you were talking to a boss this way, if you did this and you get into this habit of talking to your boss like this, how do you think they're going to respond? So it sounded like his son acted like a kid still. He didn't just automatically go, oh, yes, father, now I see the wisdom and folly of my ways and change this stuff, right? But the idea about it is that our jobs as parents is about helping kids get their needs met. It's about helping them get their needs met as soon as they can. Have you ever tried to get something met? You ever tried to get something like from a boss, but they just aren't getting it, and you try over and you try over and you try over, and they're not getting it?
It's frustrating.
That is so frustrating, and it's no different for little kids.
Well, you know, it's scary, Trey. Even as adults, in relationships where it's something that we care about, it's hard to ask for someone to meet a need. I mean, we kind of want them to see it without us having to say.
Exactly.
You know, I'm reminded of trying to tell my dad he lives thousands of miles away now. He lives halfway across the world, and I don't get to see him very often. You know, I haven't seen him in a couple of years because he's, it's just financially, you can't afford to fly to see each other in person. And, and so not long ago, I said, Dad, you know, something that would really help me. And he said, what? And I said, well, I just like to think that, every now and again, even though we're half a world apart, that I'm part of your day and that I know that you're thinking about me. And, if you just drop me an email sometime, just randomly out of the blue, hey, son, I'm thinking of you, that would really make me feel cared for. And he said, I can do that.
Sure.
But it was one of those things where, there's a little boy in me that was afraid. He'd say, oh, son, you're just, and he would make me feel like I was silly for wanting my dad to tell me that he's thinking about me.
Yeah.
But he's been real good about it. So, but yeah, getting those needs met, man, that's important stuff. So, all right. Unfortunately, with number one, I think that that's a little bit nebulous, meeting a child's needs when they're first expressed. I think that that's a hard thing for parents because, we don't always know. I mean, we know how to meet our kids' needs generally, but I think there's a lot of confusion about recognizing, like you said, that fine line of when a kid is really expressing a deep need with poor behavior or if they're just cranky and they need a nap.
I'll tell you a good example on this. We have Charlotte. She's our little 1 year old. And a while back, she was just acting like a little turd, man. She was thrusting. She was thrashing. She was just crying. And she wasn't hot. She didn't have a fever. And we just didn't know what the heck was going on. And we got to the end of the day, and I remember that I was just looking at this kid. I'm just like, my God, kid, you have been special today. And I was getting ready to. I took her out of her little onesie. And I stuck my hand in there to go grab it, and all of a sudden I was like, ah, God. And there was a little daggum sticker bar in there. Oh, and she'd had a little sticker bar sitting there poking her all day. You know what? I'd act a fool, too, if I had a sticker bar stuck in there and I didn't have any way to tell somebody, this hurts.
Right, right. She was telling you the only way she knew how, wasn't she?
Yeah, and I was wanting to call her a turd for it.
All right, so let's move on to number two here. The author suggests, here's a proactive way of doing things. Why don't you think about providing a safe, child-friendly environment? There's little point in having precious items within the reach of a baby or toddler when they can simply be put away until a child is old enough to handle them carefully. Man, I cannot tell you the number of times that either as a parent myself or I've seen other parents do it, where they get upset with their kids for being curious about playing with something. If it's a priceless heirloom, if it's something that grandma, you know, there's an age at which your kids are just going to be curious, and if you leave it sit out, they're going to pick it up because that's what kids do. They're going to put it in their mouths because that's what kids do. And she's exactly right. If you see something like that laying out and you're like, you know what? I really don't want that to get ruined. Well, why not pack it in storage and have the joy of pulling it out sometime later and saying, oh, I'd forgotten I had this. And then it'll be like new again to you. But yeah, it's all part of creating that proactive, child-friendly environment.
Well, it kind of stinks for kids because, and I don't know, guys, I raised my hand to this one. I'm really bad about, you know, wanting to sit my iPad out, you know, on the little small table that we have in the middle of the room. Mm-hmm. And it's glowing and it's on, and I get up to do something, and Charlotte will come over there, or Cora will come over there and start, you know, trying to mess with it. And then, of course, what does it turn into? I mean, immediately this turns into a negative. You just quit doing that. Don't touch my iPad, you know. You know? And then and maybe they stop or maybe they don't. But, you know, there's just something that like, reminds me of, like, you know, the snake charmers or something like that. iPads apparently have that effect on my babies. And then it's just, and they can't help but come towards
it. Mesmerizing.
They're like, oh, yeah, it's like a baby bug zapper or something. But they come to it and they can't not touch it. And I find myself spending 5 statements of quit it, stop it, go away, don't touch that, you know, instead of just getting off my butt and picking it up and putting it up somewhere high where they can't get to it. And we have a phrase that we've kind of adopted into our language to help remind us about this. And one of is just kind of the mentality of, it's like you're a baby or something, you know. And we do that as kind of a chuckle and to try to lighten the mood when we feel ourselves getting frustrated. But the second part of that is about a conscientious reentering into my conscious, this idea of, oh, yeah, you're
this
a kid.
Is what they do.
You're exploring. You're touching things. How can you not touch it? I tell you, I used to go to a school in Stephenville called Tarleton State University, and when I got my undergrad, and they built this beautiful new science building, and Jeff, they put the worst thing they ever could have put in there for a Trey Gibson. They had these giant red buttons that glowed that said do not push. And I'm a full-grown friggin' adult, and I'm struggling not to push this button, and I'm expecting a little kid not to touch the iPad. But we have that idea of, you know, it's like you're a baby or something, and we also have another phrase that we use regularly, which is, you know, we just need to remove this, don't we? We just need to remove this. And it's acknowledging that it's not about how you're being a belligerent baby. You're just doing what you do. It's actually kind of our job to remove this because it's hard to say no to this to a little kid who's still working on the very, very, very beginning stages of self-denial. You know, they haven't had to up until this point.
Right, right. They just developmentally can't do it. And, you know, as parents, we've all been where we've been over at a friend's house, or we've gone to a store where we just dread it because we know it's not a kid-friendly house. It's not a store that, you know, it's got the little things down low where little ones can pick them up and do things with them. I don't know, that's like walking through a minefield as a parent. You're like, oh, no, I
don't touch it. You know?
The gauntlet.
Yeah, when we go to my grandmother's house, she has lots of just beautiful antique relic china plates. I mean, it's like the freaking glass menagerie, man. I have a small level of dread of going there just because of watching my kids. Luckily, my kids do really good. We do very good boundary setting. It takes a lot more work preloading. But once you kind of get them realizing that mommy and daddy aren't going to let me just mess with everything I want, it really pays off in the later. So we don't have that much problem. But I always get I experience a little bit of anxiety when I go over there.
Sure. Now, I don't think that this one's saying that that you shouldn't expect your kids to try and behave well or start to learn self-control
or that
you shouldn't redirect them if they're getting into something they shouldn't be getting into.
But good point.
A lot of times we put the responsibility on the kid to behave and not on ourselves to create an environment where they're not tempted to do something they shouldn't be doing.
That's good.
So, number three is great, and I think this goes along with something that you and I have been saying a lot, and I've heard it said even before I started partnering with you on the podcast here. When applying the golden rule, Think about how you can, how you would like to be treated if you were to find yourself in the same circumstances as your child. Basically, if you wouldn't do it to an adult, why would you do it to a kid? Right? You know, let's go ahead and use some of that just reason. You know, if you get upset and you start snapping at your kid, would you do that to a full grown person? You know, that
I think that's valuable. Yeah.
And so I don't know why it is that we think that just because that parent-child relationship is going to be there in the morning, that gives us kind of free license to abuse or to treat each other poorly, you know?
Yeah.
And it goes both ways. Sometimes kids treat their parents pretty poorly, but I don't know. I teach that in my parenting class, that the parent-child relationship is unlike other relationships. I mean, friendships you have to work at. If you're mean to your friends, they're going to stop being your friends, you know?
Yeah.
The boss-employee relationship, if you're not good to your employees, then they're going to quit. If your boss isn't good to you, you're going to leave, right? You know, or you'll get fired if you're not good to him. But the parent-child relationship, man, you can be as hurtful and ugly and awful as you want to, and when you wake up in the morning, they're still going to be your kid. Yeah. But that doesn't give you the right to do it, you know?
You know, we kind of take a flip side to this. We always talk about the golden rule, you know, treat others the way that you want to be treated. And we that is one of the reinforcing principles in so many things that we do. Because right now, Jeff, we're in the middle of weaning our kids off of pure reward. Up until this point, we've used reward as a way to solidify habit, right? But there's reaching a point here with some things that we need to start learning that there's intrinsic value.
That's
in
right.
Why
for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, exactly. We do it for other reasons other than just, am I going to get a piece of candy at it? Because right now I'm really trying to strengthen in both my oldest daughter Anna and my son Grant the idea of leadership strategies. And so we're trying to move away from what am I going to get for that? Which has been fine up until this point. We have had no problem with that. We don't take that as kids being greedy. It's them, you know, wanting to reinforce their good behaviors with something good. That's fine. But we're trying to get off of that now. And so we've been moving into this mentality of treat others the way that you want to be treated. And so, you know, like even tonight we were talking about, I think Mama had come in and she'd done something for Mama. And he goes, what am I going to get for that? And I said, well, Grant, I want you to think about this. Whenever you do something nice for her, how do you think that makes Mama feel about you? And he goes, makes her feel good. So then if you asked her for something later, like, hey, could you help me turn the light on in the bathroom? You think she's going to say yes or no now? He's like, I think she'd say yes. And so we talk a little bit about this. So we love the golden rule in our house because it's the idea of relationship building. We talk a lot in our household about relationships being like a bank account. And so when you do something good for somebody, you build up, you know, money in that bank account. And every so often you have to make withdrawals out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's, you know, we've got to set a boundary with our kids or something like that. They hate boundaries sometimes. And that's a withdrawal because we've got to have a really good account build up. But we kind of talk about a flip side to the golden rule, which we call the silver rule. And the silver rule says it's kind of the contra opposite of the golden rule, but it's the idea of don't do anything that you wouldn't want done to you. So the golden rule has a tendency to treat others the way we want to be treated, but the reality is some people don't want to be treated exactly the way we do. And so a lot of times we also like to flip that around and get them thinking about the other side of that. Not only is it important to do those things that we want to have done to us, but also to avoid those things that we wouldn't want somebody to do, because I'm seeing them hit that age now where they get the idea of, let's do things nice for Mama because of this. But now we have to start re-strengthening that silver rule. Also, don't forget, what is that called? Not beneficence, but what's the other one? Do no harm. I can't remember what that one's called. You can't remember either. Okay, good. That makes me feel better because I'm brain farting totally on this. but it's beneficence and malfeasance. That's what it is. And so the flip side to that too is I think we often forget. We spend a lot of time teaching them to treat others the way we want to be treated. We forget to also teach don't treat people the way you wouldn't want to be treated. I know there's kind of a thin line that we're splitting there, but there really are some pretty serious differences.
Now, I love the golden rule, and obviously it's got some very direct biblical roots to it. But when I'm doing marriage counseling, the definition of love that I use, that I stole from an author called Everett Worthington, who wrote Hope Focused Marriage Counseling. He has a great love definition that really kind of does exactly what you were just saying, the flip side of the golden rule and silver rule there. He just kind of bundles them all into one definition for love that I use as a working definition for my couples when we're in the room, we're having a hard time getting along, and I say, okay, well, let's start with this. And it is, he says, love is valuing the other person and refusing to devalue them.
So, oh, that's good.
Value them, do unto others, and then refuse to devalue them. So don't do things to other people that you wouldn't want done to you.
Right? Yeah,
so,
I'm writing that down just for the record.
Oh, yeah.
Stealing that.
Oh, hey, like I said, all my best stuff is stolen, man.
Shoulders of giants. Yep, I have to say that a lot.
All right, number four is a great one here. I'm looking at the clock, and 15 minutes we've gone through three, Trey.
That is, what is it, that prototypical? That's pretty typical for us.
Yeah, it is. It is. Number four, this is great. It says, show empathy for your child's feelings. Ooh. Even if a child's behavior seems illogical, his underlying feelings and needs are real to him. Mm. A statement like, son, you seem really unhappy, is a good way to show that you're on your child's side.
That's so good.
I think that this is a difficult thing for parents to feel because we are so far removed from the developmental mentality, especially of young children, that sometimes their behavior when, I mean, Trey, okay, I had a family I was working with recently that the kid was overwhelmed with his homework. And his dad said, listen, when you finish your homework, you can play on the Wii. And his kid got upset. I don't want to do my homework. I'm stupid. I can't do it. And he said, listen, all you have to do is finish your homework and then you can play on the Wii. And I mean, I admire, he wanted to try and incentivize his son, you know, something you want to do. Let's just get through the hard stuff. But then his son started having a meltdown. I can't do my homework. I don't want to. I hate homework. And had a meltdown, right? Well, he just doubled down on the, dude, I'm trying to get you something you want. If you want to play the Wii. And I was like, okay, Dad, it's not about the Wii. If your kid's having a meltdown, you say, wow, you seem really upset. I mean, notice the feelings. Start to show some empathy. And but for him, it was just, for the dad, it was a logical thing. If you want to do something, you got to do this first. And he could never get to the illogic of his son's behavior, and it just frustrated him.
Yeah, that's good. You know, I think we have a tendency to see kids' emotions as inferior might be a little strong, but if nothing else, we definitely, you know, pulling back a word you pulled out earlier, which I thought was really good, we devalue. And we have a tendency to devalue what their emotions are. Now, don't get me wrong. It's really hard to do that. We're kind of taught that if we're a boss and we have a worker come in and they're throwing out behavior that is unbecoming of an adult, mm-hmm. we have a tendency to think that they're going to get less from us because of that, right? And so we kind of adopt that over into little kids who often don't – I mean, let's be honest. Even in those full-grown adults, many of them have never been taught how to handle emotions appropriately.
That's so absolutely right.
Even in those cases, there's often good reasons why we're having – I say good loosely here. But, you know, there's understandable reasons that any of us would understand if we just took a look at the, you know, the past. But a lot of times, especially with kids, they've never been taught how to handle these. And so I'm also trying to think in the encompassing sense of teens that just know how to rub our just – oh, man, we just want to punch him in the face, you know?
Yeah.
But they just rub us wrong. And it's the same issue there. We've got to cut through the crap. And let me tell you, it's hard. I would always tell when I used to run interns years ago, I would always ask them, have you read their file? Have you read the file? Because they would come in and say, gosh, this little kid just, Trey, you wouldn't believe what he said to me. And he called me a this and a that. And I've never even heard that word. I had to go look that up in Urban Dictionary, and I didn't know what that was, you know. And they were just like, Trey, I don't know if I can meet with that kid again. Have you read their file? Well, no, I hadn't read the file. And they would sit down and they would read this file that often had atrocities that these kids had been through, and mm-hmm. people that had hurt them, and people that were never supposed to hurt them who hurt them, and then the people that they told them wouldn't hurt them. And mm-hmm. so these kids are just hurt, and they would come back and say, oh. And then they would be able to deal session after session after session. But it sometimes that cannot come until we can learn to feel, to try to remember what it's like to be a kid, and to remember that their emotions are important, and even when they're acting a fool, they still are little humans that hurt.
They are. So validating their emotions is similar to showing empathy, but it's a little bit different. Showing empathy is noticing that they're having an emotion that's disturbing and making that. Validating, on the other hand, lets them know that it's okay to feel what they're feeling. So number five here in this, it says, validate your child's feelings so she knows that you understand and care and that she will never be rejected for having particular kinds of feelings.
Yeah, that is so good.
And it's tough to do because, like I said, when we're frustrated and worn out and on our last string as a parent, and then our kid starts having some sketchy behavior, you know, what we really want to do is just for them to quit it. But unfortunately, we don't get to stop being parents just because we're tired and worn out, you know. So recognizing that even if we don't like our kids' feelings, it's okay to have them. And and if we can create a safe place where our kids don't have to hide their feelings from us, or they don't have to, you know, try and be fake with us, if they can be real, even if we don't like their behaviors, man, feelings are feelings, and you're allowed to have them.
You know, I think it's real easy. Did I cut you off, Jeff?
No, go ahead.
I think it's real easy for kids to see us as superhuman. as much as we don't believe that they could or would or ever can because of the crap that we do as parents, I think in reality, our kids have a tendency to build us up. Don't get me wrong. All of us can hit that element, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, where we become very disillusioned with that. Mm-hmm. But I think that we often have a tendency to see parents as superhuman, and our kids see us as that. And I tell you, sometimes my kids will come in and tell me that they were scared of a spider. And of course, daddy's either, I either remove the spider, or if it's scary enough, I'm not going to deal with that. He's going to die, you know, and I'm the one who takes care of spiders. And I'll do that. And they're like, Dad, I was so scared. And I was like, you know, I get scared too. And they'll look at me like I just said that I am a three-horned frog who's got purple skin. They're like, what? You get scared? And I'm like, absolutely I get scared. Mm-hmm. I was scared about that. Do you remember the other day when that happened? I was terrified. I didn't know what was going to happen. Really? And so sometimes reminding them, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, I used to get mad at my mom and dad. You got mad at your mom and dad? You got mad at Lolly and Pop? Because they can't. That's unforeseeable for them.
Right, right.
Absolutely, I did. Why? You know, and sometimes us allowing, you know, we've gotten this mentality in so many of us that, like, strong parenting and effective parenting is about showing this rigid, unwavering, hard wall, you know, just stonewall Jackson parenting. Rah! When the reality is our kids need to see us struggle and to hurt and to overcome struggle and overcome hurt and see us be just as human as they are so they can recognize that they have with them all the capabilities at being the overcomers of all these things as well.
That's absolutely right. Instead of teaching our kids that those feelings don't happen for people who are in control,
that's good.
It's they do happen to us.
Absolutely.
And this is how we deal with them in a healthy, safe way, right?
That's good.
That's fantastic stuff. All right. Number six is kind of a little bit of a duplication of what we've seen earlier, talking about meeting needs. It says, meet the underlying need that led to the behavior. If we punish an outward behavior, the still unmet need will continue to surface in other ways until it's finally met.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah,
right?
I do too.
That, you know, a lot of times when I'm doing like anger management stuff, and have we ever gone over the iceberg model of anger management?
It sounds familiar, but that you and I talk that kind of stuff a lot.
Just need to recap. Yeah, just real quick. The part of the iceberg that you see, the very top part, is not the dangerous part of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. It's the part that's under the water that'll rip a hole in the hull of the ship that causes the water to get in and sink it, right? You can avoid something you can see. You know, if it's floating on top of the water, you just go around it. It's the stuff that's under the surface that's scary, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of times we talk about a model of anger. The anger is the top part that you see. And then underneath the anger are all these feelings that we don't know how to deal with. There's hurt, there's humiliation, there's fear, there's rejection, there's abandonment, there's attachment stuff. All that's under the surface, right? So the anger is the ice that's sitting on top. When I think about a glass of ice, right, and I've got you know, it's so full that there's ice sticking out the top of the water, right? Well, I can take the ice off the top of the water. I can reach in and pull that out. But what happens to the rest of the ice?
It comes up to the top.
And that's exactly what happens to these underlying emotions. If we don't ever get to that stuff and meet those needs, you can remove the behavior that's on the top, the anger that you see or the outburst.
That's good.
But if you just remove that but don't deal with what's underneath, it's going to bubble back up and it's going to appear in some other way, right?
Yeah, that's good.
So we need to start asking our kids questions. Well, are you angry because I've been on the phone so much today? And then offer a solution. Well, how about if I turn my phone off and you and I sit down and cuddle for a while, or let's go for a walk and just me and you, you know, and meet those needs for attention and for you know, just that positive attention they've been looking for. So I thought that was brilliant. I love number six.
That is a good one. I like that. All right, where are we at here? Number seven. All right. Whenever possible, find a win-win solution that meets everybody's needs. To learn effective conflict resolution, we'll skip that on this point. But I love this. See, I'm a major meet-in-the-middle kind of guy. And let me tell you, that frustrates a lot of parents. When I talk about this meet-in-the-middle, neat the old Georgia Pine stuff, it drives a lot of parents.
No, I'm the parent. I get it. Yeah.
It's positional, right? I'm the mama. I'm going to get what I'm the daddy. I'm going to get what I want because I'm the daddy because I have this position. And they don't like this stuff. And they'll ask me, Trey, why? I've had parents say, why in the world do you suggest that your kids meet you in the middle instead of not obeying, right? Mm-hmm. Obey, in terms of my parenting philosophy, is a horrible word. I do not raise obedient kids. And I get it all the time. My goodness, your kids are so obedient. I say, no, they're not. Never mistake what they're doing as a fear of not doing what I want. They do that because they care about you. They do that because they want to be kind to you, even though you're a stranger. That is a part of who they are, not a part of their fear of not doing it because I might say something to them. So, but we're big about meeting in the middle and finding solutions. Why do we do that? We do that because our kids are watching us to learn everything in life that they're going to do. And if they see me take this approach of it's my way or the highway, I'm going to get what I want from you the way I want it and the time that I want it done by, guess what kind of mentality? They're going to pick up one of two mentalities that I see. And Jeff, you may expand on this some. But one of them that I see is they'll become demanding people that demand everything the way they want it, the when they want it, at the time that they want it, right? And the exact way that they're expecting it, right? That's the one case. Or the other side is that they become ultra passive and they're going to do it the way you want it, the time that you want it, and they become that. And so they become non-assertive. So you have overly assertive or non-assertive kiddos that have a tendency to come out of this and not the balance. How do you find that balance? You have to model that sometimes I get what I want, sometimes you're going to get what you want, but it's important to maintain the relationship. Much more highly important than it is to get exactly what I want.
You know, just as a general model for conflict resolution, if I have a problem with something and I need to talk to somebody about it, I think it's almost always better to come with potential solutions. Even if it's not necessarily something that would be best for you, just coming in with complaints just puts the other person on the defensive. If you come in with, well, here's the issue, and I was thinking maybe this is a possible solution. Yeah. Well, then you're trying to find a solution rather than trying to place blame, and it just works a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes parents have this mentality that that we're in a war with our kids, and
I've
got to win. I've got to win, and I've got to dominate my kid and show them they're wrong and I'm right. Well, unfortunately, like you said, either kids are going to learn from that, and then they're going to say, "Well, no, if that's the case, well then I'm going to be right," and then you're stuck in this power. Or they learn, I can never be right when it comes to working with dad, so I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, either way, it's a lose-lose, and I'd much rather help them to see that this is a win-win. Let's find something that's good for both of us, right? Instead of this is what I want, this is what you want. Here's what's best. Now let's find what we can both agree on that works for both of us, right?
That's good. I like it.
All right. So there's that win-win idea. We're not in a battle with each other. We're on a ship, and we're heading the same direction. Now we just got to figure out whose job it is to do what for us to get there. So
number eight is another one I'm pretty passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Reassure your child that he is loved and appreciated. So-called, quote-unquote, bad behavior is often the child's attempt to express his need for love and attention in the best way that he can imagine at that moment. If he could express his needs in a more mature way, he would. See, I love that. I reject the idea of bad kids or bad attitudes or those kinds of things as much as I can. Now, it's not because their attitudes are not uncomfortable. Don't get me wrong. If you're going to define bad as uncomfortable, yes, our kids can find those attitudes that make us uncomfortable in the most uncomfortable time and places that we can personally imagine. But when I say that I remove that bad, as kids have an uncanny knack to be very linear and very simplistic in their thinking. So they hear this. If I am a kid who is doing bad things or things that my mom and dad are calling bad, then they sometimes, and I will say even maybe often, denote the rest of this equation to be, if they say that I'm doing bad things, then I must be
a bad kid.
Bad kid. It happens. I'm telling you, I've seen this in my own professions and doing this stuff. I've seen kids come in who've been told long enough that they're doing bad things that they begin to believe that they're bad, and they actually assume that is a piece of their character, and it becomes a piece of who they are, and they almost kind of like it because it gets them some kind of attention. And so I recommend staying away from, like, you know, bad behavior and those kind of things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we don't work with them on it. We don't grow with them on it. We don't teach them what we want them to do different, and we don't, you know, hold boundaries to them and set standards. It's not what I'm suggesting. I'm not one of those people that just don't ever tell your kids that they do that they're bad and they're going to turn out one. No, I don't believe that. Kids need our help to grow into that. But choosing things like this is scary because, and I thought this author nailed it in what she went on to say, because even when our kids give us these behaviors, what are they trying to do? They're just trying to express their need for love and attention. I really think it often comes back to that. Anytime my kids are acting a fool, when they're acting up, I can almost always trace it back to daddy's been out of the house a lot. Mama, mine is often because I'm working, I'm out. Corey's is often that just because she gets so busy, she's got so much housework to do. So she's here, but you can be here and be a million miles away at the same time. And sometimes kids are just needing us to pay attention. And Corey caught it tonight. We had Cora, my 3-year-old, was a little tootie patootie, it sounds like, today. But Corey picked up on that today. And she went in the bedroom and said, I'm going to watch some show with him. Will you come in there and make sure I'm not asleep so I can come back and work on clothes? Mm-hmm. And she popped her head back in a few minutes. She goes, I'm going to hang out with her. She said, Cora is just right up on me. She's got her, you know, her face needing to touch my face at all times.
And see, that's some mama love.
And that's not comfortable for Corey. I can do that a lot more comfortably. I can snuggle and all that stuff way more comfortably than Corey can. But she acknowledged that this was what my kid's needing this moment, this love, this attention. And so a lot of times it's easy to see these behaviors as them acting a fool when in reality, they're just doing the best they can with what they know.
So here's what it sounds like in my family, Trey. When we've got some of those behaviors that are uncomfortable or just downright rude to each other, reminding that even though we've got to respond to those things and we've got to correct the behavior, that doesn't mean that we don't love each other. And, we were having this problem the other morning. Mary Ann was just grumping around. She was having a bad morning. And frankly, I didn't help out with things because I was a little bit frustrated and I grumped at her. Right. And honestly, when you're getting grumped at by dad and you're already in a grumpy mood, I know I didn't contribute, but what happened was I recovered and I was like, okay. And I took a deep breath and went back to, okay, how can I be helpful? We need to get out the door. We need to get to school. But she just kept grumping and she kept grumping. And Trey, honestly, it hurt my feelings. Yeah. I was like, okay. But I didn't want to grump at her anymore. and so when I was dropping her off at school, she got out of the car and as she was getting out and collecting her stuff, I said, now, sweetheart, I know you're having a bad morning, but even though I grumped at you, I still love you. And I'm sorry that if my grumpiness just kind of rubbed off on you and turned into some other grumpiness. And she grunted at me, Trey. She went, oh, and was ready to turn around and walk away. And I said, hey. And she turned back around and I said, baby, what if something happened to me? what if this was the last time you ever saw me? Is this how you want to leave it?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I'm sorry, Dad. I love you. And I was like, there we go. I love you too, baby. Have a good day, right?
Yeah.
but yeah, just that reassurance that – and interesting enough, as I was reading this one, Trey, the thing that jumped into my head is this isn't just about parenting. This is a relationship skill right here.
Yeah,
whenever
absolutely.
Anybody's having a bad day or something like that, you know, and we automatically assume they're just being a jerk. Well, wait a minute. What if they're just trying to have their needs met, right?
Yeah.
What if we ask some questions? What if unfortunately, like you said, a lot of adults don't know how to do this well. So that last line that she writes here on number 8, she said, if he could express this need in a more mature way, he would, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people just don't know how to say, I need somebody to be nice to me. And ironically, they're being mean to everybody with this chip on the shoulders, just waiting for somebody who's not going to grunt back at them, who's not going to accept that invitation to see them as a jerk, but instead love them anyhow.
Yeah.
And just tell them, hey, you know what? You're doing good. And I love you, but your behavior is just hard to deal with right now, you know?
You know, it just dawned on me. I hate to ruminate on this one any more than we already have, but, you know, I was thinking about that. I often pray, you know what? We've never denied here at the Real Family Guys podcast that Jeff and I are both believers in the Christian Bible, but I frequently will pray, you know, God, give me the eyes to see people the way you do. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that the big flowery song that's out there about that. I mean, I really mean, help me see people's rotten behavior for what it really is. And it's not an issue of personal with me. It's whatever it is that's going on in their lives. And I'm may be a catalyst at the moment that makes it seem as though it's directed at me, but you know, help me see that. But you know, just Donna, you kind of brought it to my mind by what you're saying too. I need to be doing that with my kids. Help me to see that in them. Help me see mm-hmm. those moments for what they are. And it's not all about personal. It's all about there's just something going on, an unmet need or an emotion that we don't even know how to express. I mean, how do you express some of these bigger words that we have? I mean, they're getting past happy and sad and all that other stuff when
they don't have the vocabulary to say
exactly.
It. Number 9 is a great way to kind of defuse the situation. For us, it's been when homework has been happening recently. But this is what the author says here on the blog. Number 9 says, shift the focus away from a situation that has become too stressful to resolve at that moment. Say something like, you know what? Let's take a break. What can we do right now? You know, and man, that is such a helper. I think sometimes as parents, when stuff gets stressful, you know, as adults, we just want to power through it.
Yep.
You know, let's double down, right? Get this homework done. We only need 10 more. And honestly, taking a break sometimes can just help reset things, give us new vision, new focus. And a lot of times taking a break is what our kids need.
Yeah.
So, you know, let them know, you know, we don't have to finish this right this second. Now, it's pretty late. We're doing this homework and we got to get it done, but it doesn't have to be done right this second. Let's take 5 minutes and then come back, you know, and giving them that little out where you can reduce and de-escalate is sometimes just what they need in order to be able to get past a tough spot.
Just as a side note to this, one of the things that I think is easy to turn to on these is that we get upset with them and we want them to take a break, so we turn it into a command. You need to go to your room and chill out. You know, you need to go in your room and calm down. And I get that mentality. I still think there's a good heart behind that, but sometimes it's more about it's kind of like the verbal lashing that we want to give our kids because we're upset with them and we want to have their final word, but we also want them to chill out. And so, you know, I think Jeff worded it very well by making it a request. Well, Trey, they're my kid. Should I make it a request? What would you want it to do if it was you that was upset? And if it was your boss dealing with you? My guess is you don't want them to tell you to go to your office and close your door. You know, you're probably, if you're like me, you're like, oh, heck no, sucker. And so we would want it to be, hey, listen, would you mind just, you know, take a little break, you know? So do that with your kids too. Have that constant softness with them, even when we're dealing with them being, you know, a grump, as you said. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, moving on to number 10. Now, this is something that I think is really interesting. She says, be sure that you and your child have had nutritious food throughout the day so that your blood sugar levels stay high. Frequent small meals are best, right? And I love the holistic approach that she's taking here to meeting your kids' needs and to noticing things is sometimes there's a biochemical process going on.
That's right. That's good.
And we need to be aware if we've been, you know, pouring caffeine or junk food into our system to keep us going through whatever, you know, that it's probably going to take a toll on our moods, attitudes, and our brain function, right? So making sure that we're eating the things that we need to eat, I think is a great reminder that we exist as a whole person, and sometimes our attitudes and behaviors are almost directly tied to biochemically what's happening in our bodies.
Well, you know, I have a tendency to want to oversimplify this one a little too much, but I think she very tactically put both you and your child in here on purpose. And I think there's a lot of ways that you could flesh this one out here. But, you know, I shared with you, Jeff, that I started some pretty major eating changes. I guess we're getting close to a month ago. And once I kind of remodified about 2 weeks ago, I started making some very, I mean, we're talking life changes in terms of portion size, cut back, even quality and quantity of what I'm eating and all that stuff has been just remarkably different. And you know, what I've begun to notice is that I've also seen my kids are picking up on that. And even the other day, they often come in and their snacks are not all that impressive, but they've become to come in and they want to choose. Dad, I just think I'm going to have an apple and some fruit. Dad, I'm just going to have a half an orange and some, you know, and some water. Excuse me. I'm going to have an apple and water. And it's been interesting to see, but it's also important that we make sure we're monitoring ours, because if we're getting upset and spiraling out, then we're inviting our kids to do it too.
Absolutely.
And so anyway, I thought that was a very strategic thing she did there, and it was very smart.
All right. So make sure that we're maintaining nutrition stuff. And number 11 is a good follow-up on that whole holistic viewpoint of alternatives to dealing with some of these behaviors. Sometimes we need to remember we just need to breathe, right? One of the things that happens, Trey, when we get emotionally worked up, there's a phrase that I learned that always makes me laugh when I was in grad school. But the technical term that we had for the fight or flight or adrenaline fueled behavior stuff, we called it diffuse physiological arousal.
There you go.
That's right, dude. I'm getting a little bit aroused here. But one of the things about it is we cannot consciously control our heart rate.
Right.
We cannot consciously control our blood pressure.
Unless you're a Tibetan monk, I'm just saying.
Exactly. But what we do have direct control over, at least some direct control over, that affects both of those things is our breathing. And so this is the one card that we're dealt that we can play, is when we're stressed out, we need more oxygen. Oxygen is what gets the fuel burning in our cells and gets our brain working. And so sometimes we just need to recognize that we need to take some calm, deep breathing, you know, and that's going to help us think a little bit more clearly.
Yeah. Also, be careful, guys, that we're also separating the idea of deep breaths from the exasperated sigh. When your kid doesn't do something, you just, right? You're actually saying a statement at him. It is, I guess you could call that, I hate to say nonverbal, but I mean, it is a nonverbal. It's not in terms of direct communication.
Yeah.
So remember, you're raising your own teenage kid who's going to sigh at you and absolutely frustrate you if you're not careful with that. So be careful. Stay away from the exasperated sighs, but deep breaths can be very good. That's right. I agree.
Absolutely. So number 12 on the 22 alternatives that give positive loving messages is great. It kind of reminds me of your analogy earlier, Trey, when you said that we sometimes talk about relationships as bank accounts where we make deposits and withdrawals. This metaphor also really strikes close to home because I think it's very apt. We don't expect a car to start unless the gas tank is filled, and we shouldn't expect a child to function at their best if their emotional tank is running low. So we need to give the three things that fill a child's emotional love tank. We need to give them eye contact, gentle touch, and undivided attention, right? How often do your kids come up and, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy," and you know, whatever it is that we're doing is more important than looking directly at them and saying, "Hey, sweetheart, give me just a minute," and touching them gently, let them know that you acknowledge them. And then as soon as you can, give them that undivided attention. That's what they're looking for, right?
Yeah.
And once again, this doesn't just work with kids. this is good to do. If somebody comes up to you and they want your attention and you refuse to look at them, dude, you're communicating something to them. You're communicating you're not worth even a glance.
I agree. You know what amazes me? How many of these parenting techniques that we're talking about cross over into so many different realms. I mean, the reality is we're teaching parenting here, but this is just leadership skills.
Yeah, and relationship.
But I think it's really both of those have become a dying art. I think we've really lost the art of relationship and leadership. I mean, authentic servant leadership, and I think a lot of this is just rekindling that, and I think a great place to start with is our kids.
Absolutely. All right, now number 13, Trey. This is where we kind of got the inspiration for the title of today's podcast, right? But this is another fantastic holistic approach, realizing that what we put in our bodies sometimes has an effect on our behaviors and our attitudes. You want to read this one?
Yes, I do. Number 13 is chamomile tea. It's very relaxing for both adults and children. Taken an hour before bedtime by a nursing mother, it can also help calm her baby. Older children might like iced chamomile tea or popsicles. I am a walking, living testament. I keep chamomile in our office. And just because if I got somebody who's really stressed out or worked up, or I've even once upon a time when during an emergency when we had a lady start going into an anxiety attack years ago during a session with some parents, I busted out some hot chamomile tea and they did that, and it was very relaxing and helped bring back some of the anxiety and bring it down. And I love chamomile. We keep it in the office. I keep it at home, and it is some wonderful, wonderful stuff. And I read up on the tannins years ago. I don't remember the exact science to it anymore, but there's something about how the tannins affect your body. But chamomile tea can be a wonderful thing to do. I had never considered icing it or putting it in a popsicle form. I mean, a brilliant idea. That's great.
A little bit of sugar in there with ice. Oh, man, that's great. Good stuff. Yeah, I jumped over to Wikipedia to look at the medical uses and pharmacology of chamomile. And Trey, it's really pretty fantastic. The biggest thing seems to that seems to be working here is that it has anti-inflammatory properties and actually some blood thinning properties. So if your heart's racing, you're nervous about stuff, and then it makes it just easier for your blood to flow and for you to feel less tissue inflammation. Well, yeah, it's absolutely going to be relaxing.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
I also love lavender. Lavender is not for ingestion, but for the smell, the aromatherapy. Good stuff for relaxation.
I love teas, though. I gave up coffee about a month ago, and I've turned exclusively to teas, and chamomile is one of my favorites.
Oh, you're such a tease.
I am a tease.
But, so the power of chamomile, right? You want to solve all your parenting problems, drink chamomile tea.
Now I've got to find a distributor we can put on Family Podcast Network for this stuff.
That's right. It's like we just created a market for you. All right, number 14. Sometimes as parents, we need to take a time out with our child, right? Instead of sending them away from us,
we
need to take a time out with them, a change of scenery. You know, even if it's, you know, let's go outside, let's take a quick walk, you know, let's go outside and just look at the sunset or listen for some birds or something like that. You know, when we take a time out with our child, it can just that change of context, change of scenario can make a real difference for both parent and child.
Yeah, it's amazing how just a geographic change in yourself can make a big difference. My wife practices this one regularly. When she's had it, she just goes outside and she may sit outside and, you know, have a glass of wine, or she may go and walk around in the garden. But this is one of her favorite coping skills right here is that if one of the kiddos has to cool off, sometimes she does it too. But I think that sets a good precedence so that our kids aren't learning that every time I need a break, I need to have somebody go tell me to do it. They get it modeled. Sometimes when you need a break, you go take it yourself, and then you can keep it from getting there to begin with. So I think it's a good move.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I also like the idea of doing it with your child, of saying, mm-hmm. not you need to go away from me, but we need to shift out of whatever mode we're in, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that I took away from our time working at New Horizons Trey, when we went out to the ranch, which was a residential treatment center that New Horizons runs out near Goldthwaite, Texas, whenever we went out to the ranch, they had their first line correction tool when they were working with these kids out there who had come through some hard traumas and were there. Their first line thing was something called on staff. You remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Instead of sending kids away or removing them from the group, they brought them closer to the adult
yes.
leader, right?
Yes.
I'm going to bring you closer. You're going to be with me, not so much that I can keep an eye on you and tell you that you're doing wrong, so that I can meet your needs, and you'll be right here with me so I can so I can be present with you. And yeah. I really like that mentality.
I do too.
All right, number 15, I think is a plug for for the website here. They talk about parenting cards, but that's not something that we can directly show here on the podcast. If you're interested, you can go take a look at it at naturalchild.org. It's some good stuff. I love the parenting cards, but we're going to skip number 15, go on to number 16, which is another kind of holistic thing here as an alternative that sends a positive message. If your kid's acting out or having a hard time with something, offer a massage. A bedtime massage can help a child to sleep more soundly, giving her more resilience and energy for the following day. And Trey, I don't know about you, but there is power in positive yes. touch, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hugs, pats on the backs, high fives, things like that that convey positives. And I don't know about you, but I love massages. I love me some muscle. You know, if I'm hurting, just somebody rubbing my shoulders or rubbing my feet, man, that's good stuff.
Well, problematically, we have sexualized and romanticized the back massage and stuff like yeah. that to a certain degree. I'm not saying everybody has or in all cases or in to the fullest extent, but we've kind of romanticized it a little bit and turned it into something that is more sexualized. But the reality is kids experience stress and tension just like we do. And I tell you, I heard
and
about
lives
this a
in
while
the
back.
Muscles.
And exactly, yeah. it does. And let me tell you, I have really turned around and started turning myself into a massaging daddy. And it is amazing the little knots that I feel in these little kiddos mm-hmm. that are just stuck there. But, they've got to that point now. You start rubbing on them, and I just go, oh, my gosh, dad. You get a little slit, a little bit of drool coming out the side. But it's amazing. They need those things. And so not only is it affection, it's getting to touch them with purpose, but it's something that is actually creating a relaxation effect. It's moving out the muscle tension that's in there and allowing the lactic acid reabsorption and all that other
right,
stuff
right.
that scientifically happens behind it. But kids need it too, and I think we forget that.
Sure.
So we forget to just sit down and rub their little shoulders and take time to work out tension.
And not just the lactic acid stuff, but there are neurochemicals that are released when somebody touches you in a loving, caring way.
That's good.
Somebody gives you a hug or, like I said, a pat on the back or a high five or even shaking your hands in a nice, firm, assertive way of somebody that you respect. It releases neurochemicals yeah. that give you that reinforcement, that connective relationship bond.
That's good. That's good.
All right. So once again, we're wrapping up here. We've got 17 through 22 here of alternative responses that give positive loving messages. So number 17 is that when we give our kids choices, it fills that need for them to have a voice. I got to tell you, the position of being a child means that you have very little power, very little influence. Everybody else is
yep.
bigger than you,
agreed.
Stronger than you, and they matter more than you. And so when we give our children choices, it allows them, one, to develop that idea that they're responsible for their own behavior because they can choose it. But two, it also helps them to feel connected, right? Offering choices, even if they seem unimportant to you, do you want the red cup or the blue cup, right? Helps a child feel that they have some say over their life, right? Especially when they're having to deal with changes where they had no say, like if you had to move recently or change schools or something like that where it's completely out of their control. Helping them feel a little bit more in control is absolutely a wonderful thing you can do for your kids.
You know, I admit that this one was kind of a conviction to me because I've gotten really bad, like especially in the morning when I'm getting the kids up and getting them breakfast, they've been asking for a certain color bowl. And, Dad, I want the green bowl, especially Grant. Green is his favorite color. Unequivocally, that is his favorite color. And he
it's
always wants the green bowl.
Green is the best color.
It's a great color. And he always asks, Dad, can I have the green one? And the other day, I kind of snapped at him a little bit. I was like, what's the matter? it was one of those. And it doesn't matter. It's a freaking bowl. Eat your cereal. Of course, I was a little grumpy, and I woke up that morning and whatnot. But, you know, when I read this, when I first found this one, that one was a conviction to me because I realized, why does he want it? There's probably a lot of different reasons that it very well could be, but I bet one of the primary ones is it's one of the choices that he gets to make in a world where so many choices are made for him by mom and by dad and by, you know, Sunday school teachers and everything else. It's just nice to remember that I have...
Well, why do you drink your tea out of a certain mug?
That's right. I agree. Because I have a mug. I have a mug that's mine.
I know it. Yeah, that's good stuff, man. And recognizing that that our kids' preferences are not just, silly
trivialities,
inconsequential. Yeah, yeah, I like that triviality. So
let's see.
All right. Now, number 18, Trey. This reminded me of a Star Trek episode. Do you remember the Next Generation episode where there was the counselor who was he couldn't speak, and so he had three people that were like impasse?
Oh yeah, that talked for him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that. Right.
And so they were on this diplomatic mission where he was supposed to be the envoy, and then he ends up getting killed. Right. And so Picard has to be the level head, and I remember at the very end when everyone's shouting, and he comes in and one of the things he says is he just talks calmly, and everyone sees him talking and they quiet down to listen to him, and somebody says, "How did you know that would work?" And he says, "Well, oftentimes people who cannot hear an angry shout will strain to hear a whisper." Right.
Yeah.
So number 18 says, "Try whispering." When tensions are high, whispering can help get a child's attention and also help calm the parent. Now, we're not talking that threatening, "You better do what I say or I'm going to," you know, not that kind of whisper, but more of a, "Hey, I just realized that we were shouting." You know, just taking your tone of voice and your volume down has its own de-escalating effect.
Yeah. What was that? Well, there was a Facebook meme that was out a while back that had a dad kneeled down behind his kid whispering, and it's... It said, "Next time you need your kids to do something, just whisper. It scares them more." But I'll admit that there is more power in that. There is more impact. Maybe is a better word to choose from here. There is more impact whenever I mean, because if I'm hooting and hollering at them, that doesn't seem to do a squatting bit of good. But if I'll get down, if I'll take a knee, and I get down there and say, "Listen, baby, when you do that, it is not okay because," and I give them the reason. It's like they enter into instant pay attention mode. You know, even our 3-year-old will just lock. Oh, she will lock on to what I'm saying when we move into that. Versus the yell, which seems to create a cacophony of craziness afterwards. Whenever we yell. So I love the whisper technique, Sam.
Now, on the other hand, you got to be careful. I remember a mom was trying to potty train her kid, and you know, he would say things in public like, "Mommy, mommy, I gotta go pee," and she got really embarrassed by it. So she said to him, "She said, listen, next time instead of saying, 'Mommy, mommy, I gotta go pee,' let's use something a little bit, you know, that won't call as much attention. Why don't you just tell me, 'Mommy, mommy, I have to whisper,' and I'll know, okay?" And so they practiced that, and he got good at it, right? So one night she was asleep, middle of the night, kid comes up to her, says, "Mommy, mommy, I have to whisper," and in her groggy sleep, she said, "Oh, honey, go whisper in daddy's ear." Got to be careful. Careful how we use that stuff.
That's a good one.
Yeah. All right, number 19 and 20, I'm going to kind of combine here because I think they are the same theme here. Number 19 says, a good positive reinforcing thing is sometimes you can just give your child time, right? And it helps them build autonomy. For instance, a statement like, "Well, let me know when you're ready to, you know, get into the car seat or put on your jacket," gives them a sense of, "Well, I'm going to do it because I chose to," and it makes them want to cooperate because they're doing it intrinsically rather than, "You do it in your time." Now, we don't always have the luxury of doing this, right? Sometimes we're in a hurry, but if we can be proactive about this, we can say, "Okay, I'm going to make sure, I'm going to give them time to do this instead of bossing them around or making them do it on my agenda. I'm going to let them know, okay, well, when you're ready, you know, we can't go till this happens, but when you're ready, go ahead and put your jacket on, and then we'll go, right?" And number 20 is kind of the flip side of that. Sometimes you need to give yourself time, right?
Yeah.
Count to 10 silently, ask for time. You know what? I don't exactly know what to say here. Or if I say something right now, it's probably going to be the wrong thing. So I need just a minute to think about how I want to respond to this. Sometimes that can put a little bit of fear in your kid's heart. Uh-oh, what's daddy going to think of, right? But giving ourselves time, right? Usually I'll say things like, "I love my kids. I love my kids. I love my kids." To remind myself.
"Not going to kill him. Not going to kill him. Not going to kill him."
Right. "Orange is not my color. Orange is not my color. Orange is..."
I'm not going to look good in that jumpsuit. All right, I'm going to go ahead. Are you ready if we kind of go ahead and book it on?
Yeah, I'm good. We got these last two. Let's
hit
them.
Number 21 says, "Remember that children create images from our words." I just thought this was pretty interesting. They said, "Slow down is more effective than stop running. The first statement creates an image of slowing down, while the second one creates a picture of someone running. Don't run, stop running, right? We're still throwing out the words of what we don't want them to do. We're identifying the deficit instead of telling them what we want to do. We talk about that a lot. The word don't is too abstract to overcome the more concrete and compelling image of running. Similarly, a specific request is more effective than a general one. Please put down the glass instead of be careful. This is brilliant stuff. I mean, it really is. And what do they call this? Psycholinguistics, I think is what they call this. But there really is an element that our human brains respond better to those types of things. I'm reading a book right now by George Orwell called 1984, I think.
Yeah,
and it's a wonderful book, but they talk a lot about psycholinguistics in there and how the manipulation of certain words and phrases that they put together could actually control a populace. But
yeah, it's how to speak.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But anyway, there's a lot of truth to that in how we do that with our parenting. If we're focusing on, I mean, the concept of do not run, especially to little kids, it's very simple for us to imagine in our minds as adults. But a lot of times when you're used to simpler commands, you know, using things like do not do this is much more complicated than I need you to walk.
Right.
So I love this. I think there's an absolute science behind this that's valid. It's at least at face valid, and it's good. I like it.
Well, and we don't typically think in words. We think in pictures.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is the developmental thing that she's addressing here in this point, is that if it's true that we think in pictures, it's easier to imagine a picture slowing down rather than a picture of stopping something. I mean, how do you know that you're stopping or starting? That's just not how a picture looks. So anyhow, that's really good to remember, especially from a developmental perspective.
And I think last one's one of my favorite, Jeff's.
This is great. Why don't you take it?
Ask yourself, will I look back at this later and laugh? If so,
probably yes.
If so, why not now? Create a new kind of memory that you would like to have whenever you look back on this day. I think that's brilliant advice. It sounds like it's a little oversimplified again, but I think this is a rich question. And is it something that later you would find to be kind of silly and funny? Or is it, you know, there are things in life that I think are absolutely serious. If my kid brings home a dime bag of weed, we're not going to laugh about that. Well, maybe we will. Maybe they'll legalize it by then, but... You know, there's just certain things in life that I'm not going to laugh about. But most of those things that are going to happen are a part of growing up. They're a part of everybody's life. Mine, yours, everybody else's out there are going to go through some of these things. And we have a tendency to make situations way more important than they needed to be. And it's so detrimental and it's so hurtful to the relationship and sometimes because a lot of times they're just growing up and they're doing what kids growing up are going to do. And what they need is a mom and a dad who are willing to sit down and say, you know what? You're doing what you normally want to do. I'm going to encourage this from you, and I encourage you to grow, but just to learn that, you know what, it may seem like it stinks, but it's a little bit funny.
Well, that is a great way to wrap up these 22 alternatives to other punishments. And these alternatives all, Trey, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think fit with this the philosophy that we espouse here, that being a proactive parent means that we're getting ahead of the issues and trying to create situations where we are helping things go right instead of having to correct things that are going wrong.
Great way to put that.
And so we just wanted to give a gift to you, our listeners, of ways. You know, so often we tell our kids don't do something, and we remind ourselves, no, we have to tell them what to do. Well, as parents, you know, I think we can spend a lot of time as parents saying what we shouldn't do as parents. But this is a great list of things we ought to do. We ought to be doing in a proactive manner so that we can convey positive messages that we love our kids. It's okay for them to feel what they feel. But by and large, all this stuff, you know what they all have in common? All of these require us as parents to be a little bit more mindful of things and to look past behavior. So, that, honestly, a lot of this stuff, it's on us, right? We don't want to put it on our kids to stop doing stuff. We need to put it on us to create an environment where they just get to be who they are and we can love them through it.
Yeah, so. That's good. All right, you want to take us out?
Yeah. This has been another great day, Trey. You and I both say multiple times as we get ready to do this stuff, this is so much fun. We enjoy sharing this stuff. The perspective of two dads who are just struggling to make our way in the world, to raise some of the best kids in the world, to be the best people we can be while we're doing it. We love our wives, and together we have situations that we hope we can share with you from our education and our experience. They can collide.
Kaboom!
And we get to bring you a great podcast every week. So we want to invite you back next Friday when we will once again share with you some tips on how to be the best parent you can be for your wonderful kids. We love you. Come back. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.